From Show and Tell, True Tales of Lesbian Lust. Edited by Nicole Foster. Published by Allison Books. Sydney Larkins, The Favor. The Chicago show was shaping up to be more trouble than it was worth. I had hesitated to take the rigging job with this outfit in the first place, but a bunch of their regular roadies were in Europe with another show, so they were desperate and therefore paying well. I reminded myself of that fact when I discovered we weren't in Chicago at all. We were across the border in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Nothing against Wisconsin, but when someone told me one of our gigs was in Chicago, I was a little surprised to end up in Kenosha instead. The site turned out to be a muddy high school football field just off the interstate, with nothing around but a dilapidated Days Inn and a questionable food and drink establishment called the Brat Stop. The June weather was downright crappy for a girl used to Southern California's mild summers. The sun would burn for hours, then the rain would explode without warning. The night before, a surprise thunderstorm had destroyed much of our stage setup, which had taken 2 days to erect. I didn't look forward to building it again, and it was only the fourth stop on the tour. 22 more to go. Surveying the field at 5 a.m, I realized the damage was mostly superficial. Only one of the frames on which a banner was rigged had been permanently bent. The others had merely been knocked out of place by the wind. Everything was still soaking wet and filthy. Should be able to get this in shape in plenty of time, I thought. I wasn't the only one at the site early. The other riggers, sound guys, and stagehands were milling around, trying to decide how to start the recovery effort. I walked over to David, the crew captain. Anything serious? I asked. Nope, he said. No permanent damage, but it did just enough to make the whole day a pain in my ass. No kidding, I thought. This whole gig is a pain in my ass. I walked back toward the destroyed metal frame, past the merchandising trailer set up on the field's left side. The marketing crew was nowhere to be seen, probably sleeping in. The sponsors are going to be really pissed if their precious merchandising trailers aren't spotless and shiny by noon, I thought. Oh well, not my problem. I focused on trying to build a new frame by piecing spare parts together from the stash I kept in my truck. After a couple hours, I had everything in place except for one missing elbow joint. I wandered over to the main supply truck to see if I could snake an extra one from the materials manager. As Jim walked the shelves looking for the joint, I sat on the edge of the truck, took off my hat, and lit a cigarette. I inhaled deeply, closed my eyes, and let the newly risen sun heat my face. "Well, I'll be," Jim said from behind me. "What's that?" "Those marketing folk decided to show up after all," he replied. I opened my eyes and saw four figures walking toward the merchandising trailers. I recognized the swagger of Kevin, the manager. He could talk anyone into buying the cheap T-shirts, keychains, and other trinkets they hawked. The rest of the crew thought of the marketing team as a bunch of lazy freeloaders, and Kevin did nothing to combat that impression. "Fucking princesses!" Jim shook his head with disgust. "I know they bring in revenue, but those four are completely useless when it comes to the real work of getting the show up and running. I can't believe they call themselves roadies. It's bad for morale." I tended to agree. I looked at the ruined field, the stage's steel truss supporting the precariously hanging video screen. Slowly, some tough stagehands raised it back into position. I glanced back to the four people polishing the merchandising trailer's chrome ramps. What a joke. I chuckled to myself and took a last drag on my cigarette. For a moment, I imagined what it would be like not to worry about heavy lights and poles falling on people's heads, instead worrying about how pretty a stupid merchandise counter looked. I saw a hand work a cloth over the trailer's shiny metal. It was a surprisingly strong-looking hand, with long, lean fingers entering the grooves of the diamond plate floor. A muscular forearm soon appeared, displaying toned biceps and triceps. The smooth skin strained against a tight T-shirt that hid the well-defined shoulder. The shirt rose slightly with each sweep of the cloth, drawing attention to a long, graceful neck. The neck was powerful and feminine. Suddenly, I was keenly aware how long it had been since I'd had the pleasure of touching a beautiful woman.
"Sure wouldn't kick that J.D. out of bed."
Jim's comment jerked me out of my fantasy as he caught me staring. I tried to refocus.
"But I have it on good authority that she plays for your team, sport. I'm out of luck."
He grinned and put something in my hand.
"Here's your elbow. Good luck."
He winked, and I felt my face redden as I took the piece of metal pipe. I'd heard rumors about JD's sexuality, and she had certainly set off my gaydar, but despite our occasional conversations and the fact of living on the same touring bus, we never got beyond a surface interaction. She was always friendly, but definitely shy and intensely private about her personal life. I made an automatic assumption that a woman who kept her company so closely guarded wouldn't be interested in an obvious dyke like me. An hour later, I finished attaching the dirty banners to the new frames as a voice behind me asked, "Are you going to have those cleaned in time?"
"I will, as long as everything stays dry," I said, turning around. I immediately knew that would never happen, as I felt hot liquid pool between my legs.
JD stood before me in her tight t-shirt and cutoffs, looking as hot as ever despite dirt smudges on her arms and face. I couldn't help but notice the way her jeans hugged the curve of her hips, accentuating her thigh muscles. Knowing I had taken too long to make eye contact, I deliberately forced my eyes upward, over her torso's soft lines, across her collarbone's sharp, sexy protrusion, up to her full lips and high cheekbones, until I locked eyes with her. She smirked, unself-conscious about my frank appraisal, meeting my gaze intensely.
"I have a feeling that's not going to be dry for a while," she said, moving closer and running her hand over the mesh banner. "Is there anything I can do to help?"
"No, I think I have everything under control," I said.
"Oh, I'm sure you do. You always seem to. But if you decide you need a favor, just remember, I'm available."
She turned and walked away. I felt shell-shocked by the erotic energy we had just exchanged, but I quickly attributed it to my own sex drive. JD was simply interested in giving me a hand.
Or a whole fist, my libido hoped.
The show went off without a hitch. We struck the majority of the site that night, but weren't scheduled to move to the next city until the following evening. A hypothetical scenario. 36 roadies in a rural area with one hotel and one bar, leaving the next day for another 18 weeks of life on a bus. Given permission to get the sleep the previous day's storm had denied them, allowed to return in the morning instead of working through the night. Needless to say, sleep was not at the top of our agenda. I was on my third beer at the Brat Stop and had my name on the chalkboard in line to play pool when J.D. sauntered over.
"Any interest in a friendly game of air hockey while you wait to destroy these boys at pool?" Her olive skin, deeply tanned by hours spent in the sun, looked even darker against her crisply pressed white shirt. The top three buttons were unbuttoned, affording me an intriguing view of her cleavage. I'd already been waiting 45 minutes to get on the table, and since her perfume danced seductively in my nose, I couldn't think of a single reason not to accept her challenge.
"Sure," I replied.
As I scrounged up quarters from the depths of my jean pockets, I regarded her.
"Why do I not quite believe you when you say this is going to be a friendly game?"
"Well, things can definitely be friendly, but they're never free. There needs to be a stake involved."
She obviously felt no pain, and for a moment, I wondered if it was ethical to pursue a serious wager in such a scenario. I decided to leave the ball in her court.
"What shall we play for?" I asked.
She held my eyes for a beat before responding.
"How about a favor? It can be anything, redeemable at any mutually agreeable time."
Her eyes bored into me, and for the second time that day, I felt blood rush to my most sensitive lips. As much as my mind said this was a bad idea,
It was hardly the most vocal body part as I made the decision. "Fine with me," I heard myself say. "Let's go." Half an hour later, the score was tied 3-3, and we were halfway through the 7th game. I was well into my 5th beer, and quite frankly, all I could think about was the way JD's fingers grasped the mallet and the way her arm muscles flickered when she took a shot. I blamed this distraction for my 4-3 loss. After some pointed looks and a lot of drunken innuendo, I stumbled across the street and back into my hotel room, now owing JD a favor. Life's tough, I know. I managed to grab a couple hours of sleep and get back to the field on time in the morning. We were due to complete the breakdown and go back to our rooms for showers by 7 p.m., so the buses could leave for Cleveland by 10 p.m. The rest of the breakdown was uneventful. I kept looking for JD out of the corner of my eye, but knew she and the rest of the marketing team had no reason to be on site, as they had finished their work shortly after the show had ended. But thoughts of her eyes and the games the night before made the day go by faster. As I worked, I fantasized about the amazing and varied things her hands could do to me, the way her naked body would feel against mine, the way her face would look when she came. "Stop it," I told myself. "Never going to happen. She was just drunk and having fun, and you're making too much out of it. And now you're horny as hell, just in time to board a bus filled with 8 other people, no privacy, and a coffin-sized bunk for a bed. Well done. Way to go." We packed the trucks in record time, and most of us were on our respective buses by 8:30. As always, our driver, Andy, had taken care of us by stocking our small kitchenette with snacks, sandwich fixings, the occasional piece of fruit, and of course, beer and other alcohol. I was the last to arrive on my bus, and Andy was right behind me with orders to move out once everyone was accounted for. By the time I situated myself and prepped my bunk for the night's trip, we were rolling down the interstate toward Ohio. The rest of my bus mates were already in the throes of a mini-party. It had been such a hellish stop on the tour that I only wanted to sleep and put Kenosha behind me. But I knew no one would let me off that easy. My best move, I thought, was to wait out the drunken revelry until everyone passed out. The boys had the back lounge's television tuned to a ridiculous, soft porn flick, so I moved to the front lounge, where the entertainment fair was a recent action blockbuster. I grabbed a beer from the fridge, cracked it open, and sat down at the table. Surveying my colleagues, it was clear that waiting them out wouldn't take too long. I calculated how many days it would be before I had the privacy of my own hotel room again, when JD sat down across from me. "They have a huge head start," she said, pointing to my beer. "You'll never catch up." I smiled and took another sip. I was looking forward to a mellow trip, but that's not going to happen. I'm just out here for fear of getting dragged out of my bunk if I try to go to bed. And I'm pretty sure they won't let me change the channel either. So I'd rather just nurse this puppy and stare out the window until they calm down. She grinned. "How about some cards?" "Now there's a wholesome pastime." "Maybe not so wholesome," she said, winking and handing me a deck. I fanned the cards. The backs displayed naked 1950s pinup girls. "I'd never peg you as a fan of the girly magazines." "Well, there's a lot you don't know about me. Go get another drink, and we'll play gin." I crossed the aisle to the kitchen cabinet. Swayed by the game's suggestive name, I found the nearly full bottle of Bombay Sapphire and poured myself a healthy slug. This could get interesting, I thought as I put the bottle back on the shelf. 2 hours and many drinks later, our rowdy busmates had retired to their bunks to sleep off their party. JD and I were still having a grand old time playing cards, having switched from gin to go fish after the third hand. Despite the game's laughter and silliness, I couldn't help noticing JD's well-manicured nails and long, slender fingers. I also couldn't stop the throbbing between my legs as I imagined what those fingers might feel like inside me. Smoke? Once again, she had caught me amidst inappropriate thoughts. I was grateful for the easy question. Absolutely. We made our way to the very front of the bus, stumbling slightly. We pushed the curtain aside and sat down on the entry stairs next to Andy.
"Hey, ladies, I thought you'd be in bed long before those yahoos ever crashed out."
"I think I'll be there soon," I replied, accepting the lighter from JD.
"I'm beat."
We chatted with Andy as we smoked. JD's shoulder touched mine, and I felt the heat of her eyes every time she looked my way.
"I'd better get out of here or I'm going to get myself in trouble," I thought.
Just as I was about to retire for the evening, I felt my right sock slip off my foot. I turned to see JD dangling it in front of me.
"Are you really going to bed with only one sock?"
Her words were slightly slurred, but her eyes were clear and intense, sending an electric shock straight to my clit. Caught off guard, I stretched forward for my sock. JD whipped the sock behind her back, out of my reach, and I fell against her. I tried to pull back, but she grabbed the back of my head, pushing my face into her neck. I was still a little confused until I felt her nails dig into my back, and I heard her sigh softly. The sock forgotten, I moved my hand to her stomach and stroked it gently. Her hips arched toward me, her thighs parted.
"Wait," she breathed. "Andy's right there. We should go back to the lounge."
I released her, and she headed into the lounge. I followed, and as I drew the curtain, I saw Andy's lips curve into a smirk.
"Eyes on the road, buddy," I thought.
The door to the bunks was closed, but there was only a thin curtain between the lounge and Andy, so I popped a CD in the stereo and turned it up. JD had tossed a pillow and a blanket onto one of the couches, and she stood in the kitchen dimming the lights. I walked toward her, wrapped my arms around her from behind, and kissed the back of her neck.
"I need to take my contacts out," I mumbled.
She turned around and pushed me against the refrigerator.
"Uh-huh,"
she said, pinning my shoulders with her hands and grinding her pelvis into mine.
"You go ahead and do that."
Any possible response was quickly silenced by her mouth on mine, not at all gentle. Her tongue probed my mouth, and her teeth bit my lips. I couldn't move, couldn't breathe. I was swept away by her forcefulness.
Shy indeed.
This woman had the sexual inhibition of a dominatrix. She let up for a moment, just long enough to maneuver me to the couch. Pushing me down, she tore off my other sock, unzipped my pants, and slid them over my hips as I yanked my shirt off. She made quick work of my bra and underwear, and I shortly found myself pinned again, this time underneath her. Her mouth was relentless, demanding the full attention of everything it touched. Her hands ran over my torso, grabbing my breasts and pinching my nipples. Her tongue moved down my neck, teeth nibbling here and there, stopping randomly to bite fully, making me moan. When her mouth reached my breasts and took a nipple between her teeth, I gasped. Each exquisite twinge of pain sent shockwaves to my clit, a rush of hot liquid pooling between my legs. A hand slid down my inner thigh, working its way toward my cunt excruciatingly slowly. My hips had a mind of their own, thrusting toward her, trying to hurry the inevitable contact. My breath came quickly. The hairs on the back of my neck stood up, and my clit felt like it would explode. She gasped when her fingers finally found my inner lips.
"Oh my God, you're so fucking wet,"
she breathed as she slid two fingers inside me. My muscles clamped around her fingers as she started to slowly move in and out of me. Every nerve ending tingled in anticipation as her head continued its journey down my body. When her mouth finally paused between my spread legs, her hot breath flowed over my hair. She was millimeters from me.
"Please,"
I moaned, looking down at her. She met my eyes with a teasing look of her own, inhaling my scent deeply.
"You smell so good,"
she said, before moving closer. When the tip of her tongue touched my hardened nub, I cried in pleasure. She moved slowly, simultaneously enveloping my entire clit in her mouth and flicking its tip with her tongue. Her fingertips continued to massage my inner muscles as her tongue worked my clit expertly. As I went out of my mind with ecstasy, she coordinated her rhythms with the bucking of my hips. The throbbing of my cunt drowned out the music from the stereo and the sound of the road. I felt a tingling orgasm approaching faster than I wanted, but I could do nothing to stop it. "Yes, yes, yes, please," I cried as the waves of pleasure swept over me. She didn't move away at first, but stayed with her tongue against my clit, moving it incrementally to cause orgasmic aftershocks. "I can feel you contracting around my fingers," she said. "It's so damn sexy." I was in the process of getting myself together to return the favor when she murmured, "I don't think you're quite finished." She started moving inside me, sliding her fingers out, then in again, causing my hips to react, matching the increasing speed. I moaned, unable to keep a clear thought in my head. "You need more than this, don't you?" she asked as she moved to her knees. She slid a third finger into me and began to move faster and faster until she thrust with all of her strength. "Oh, God, yes. Fuck me. Faster. Harder. Oh, yes." I was a madwoman, thrashing about and moaning. "I'm going to come all over the couch." "Go ahead. It's okay," she cooed as she thrust into me harder. "I want to feel you all over my hand." Her words excited me even more, and I stopped worrying about the couch, the bus, Andy, anything other than what she was doing to me. Her fingertips found the right place inside me, and suddenly a deluge of liquid poured out of me. I screamed, grabbing her shoulders, pulling her on top of me. "I've never seen anything like that before," she said once my breathing calmed. "The couch is soaked." I laughed weakly. "I tried to warn you. I wasn't kidding around. I loved it. It was spectacular." "You were spectacular. I had no idea you had it in you," I said as I pushed her to the floor. "I told you there was a lot you didn't know about me," she replied. "Like what you look like under those clothes?" I asked as I unbuttoned her shirt. I awoke on the floor of the lounge near dawn, naked and alone. The bus was still moving and everything was quiet. I grabbed my clothes and stumbled back to my bunk. I crawled inside, but not before I pulled back JD's curtain to see if she was there. She was, sleeping soundly, with the same distinctive smile she had on her face when she came. That was the only time we got together, as the sponsors cut the marketing staff when we got to Cleveland and sent the four of them home. JD and I lost touch, but I'll never forget that overnight bus trip. And neither will the others on the tour, thanks to Andy. He said he found something more compelling to listen to as he drove that night, instead of his audiobook or book on tape, as he continued to call them. He also brought the mirror on the front lounge's ceiling to my attention. Damn, I'd completely forgotten. Guess I'll just have to take advantage of that next time I have to pay back a favor.